Welcome back, my dears. Thank you for ringing the bell. And however that time was spent, I hope there's a sense of nourishment and ease that came with it. And as I mentioned before, we'll just move right into the sit. So again, I'm going to invite you to close your eyes or drop the gaze and allow the body to come into a posture, whether it's sitting upright or lying down, where there's an energetic alertness, a sense of availability to your own experience, availability to the teachings, and just taking a few of these early moments to again feel your body resting on the earth, on the chair, the cushion. And for our anchor today, I want us to stay in the body, the mindfulness of the body, and if it can just be resting in the body. So if it feels more beneficial to stay with resting the attention on the breath or resting the attention with the most dominant sensations that arise. As we things come and go, sensations come and go. But I also want to offer allowing kind of a dual attention in a way. So some of our attention, maybe 50, 60, 70%, stays in the body. And this can just look like resting some attention on where the sit bones are resting. Or where the feet are rest, meeting the earth. So some connection to the lower half of the body, which allows there to be a sense of embodiment, of connection to the earth element. And even pausing just now to feel into the bones in the body as they are resting upon the earth. This relative solidity and stillness of the bones in the hands, the arm, the skull, the vertebrae, the rib cage, the pelvic bowl, the long bones of the legs. This earth element within, resting upon the earth element beneath and around us as a place of homecoming, of stillness. And again, keeping some attention here. And you can keep all of your attention here if that feels like that's going to be a beneficial way to move through this sit. But this option of from this embodied sense of resting in the bones, resting in the earth elements. And then watching the mind. Because often the mind can be busy and pull us into thinking about this or that, planning this or that, the to-do list of this or that. Energetically, again, there can be a sense of busyness in the mind. And one thing, if it feels like it resonates, to kind of play with the relative stillness of the bones. The earth element of the body, again, resting upon the earth element. And then the seductive pool of the thinking mind. Hey, think about this. Hey, what about this? Look over here. There can be a kind of energetic, again, busyness of the mind. And the invitation here is to stay. With this relative stillness in the body and just observing what might be the busyness of the mind. That said, the mind might be very still and connected and unified, so then there's a congruence of stillness. Interesting. So we're not judging one is good or bad or better than the other. It's just noting a sense of potential stillness in the body, as we key into the earth element. And then noting the energetic quality of the mind, which again, it may be still and steady and quiet and unified for a moment. And then it might get busy for a moment. And to, again, if this feels helpful, to kind of play with this edge or this tension of what can be the busyness of the mind, the relative stillness in the body. And if this makes sense, almost being able to luxuriate in the earth element of the body, that's just like, oh, just stay here. That image of the mountain arising from the horizon, like Mount Fuji or Mount Shasta in Northern California. The mountain that's unperturbed by the wind patterns, the weather patterns. So this body of ours can sit steady, still like the mountain. And then bringing this curious attention, how is it in the mind? And in one moment, it might be steady and still, and the next, it might be busy, but an energetic quality of busyness, trying to figure something out or planning, doing, judging, comparing. And just feeling that difference, the stillness and then the busyness. If this makes sense. Yeah. If not, let it go. And just allow the attention just to stay in the body. The sensation of the earth element, or following the sensation of the breath. Please know and remember there's no such thing as a bad sit. We come, we take our seat. We orient our attention as we undertake the training of the mind. And please feel my gratitude at this opportunity we have to sit together. Always lovely to sit together. And today I want to stay with a theme that we've been on the last couple of weeks or so on the paramis, the perfections of the heart, of which there are 10, beginning with in the mythology of these paramis, is that these were before the Buddha was incarnated into his life as the prince, the Siddhartha. His previous lives, he inhabited each of these heart qualities, such that he had all this practice in other lives, that when he was born as Siddhartha, his heart was quite developed. But these qualities, that's the cosmology, the qualities of generosity and integrity and wisdom and wise use of energy. And today, looking at patience, kante is the Pali word, and it can be perseverance, determination, patience. And in my mind, patience and equanimity, which is the last of the paramis, they're very close siblings. Energetically, they feel very similar to me. But patience has this the quality of the pure perfection or pure patience of sort of sitting with, much like equanimity or upekkha has a sort of sense of sitting in the middleness of it all. That there's a capacity to kind of meet what comes. There's a line in the suttas of the long enduring mind. And I remember early on when I was learning 20 odd years ago, I heard that phrase. I was like, that sounds awful. The long enduring mind. And sort of understanding it was more the mind that almost more akin to seeing the world through grandmother's eyes, which is often, again, how equanimity is spoken about, but just okay. There's room for this. And the teachings of patience is really to develop again the capacity to pull us away from being reactive and being able to sit. So, in the instructions, if they made sense, that idea of sitting with the earth element, aligning with an embodied sense of the earth element, and then watching the busyness of the mind as I sat with it, because the mind is like, hey, let's do. Or in the task of like, I need to send this email, I need to do this. There's a pulling up and out and into action that we can be, if we don't pay attention to, we can kind of be off and running and doing things like, wait, what am I doing? Because the pull of the mind can be so great. And wanting to, again, if it worked, to play with that edge of to both feel the stillness of the earth element in the body, and then just to observe the mind that might be ticking the to-do list, or you really should do this, or you should do that. And when we don't have that sort of cloak of awareness with it, we're kind of up and doing it. That time, like, we'll go get a cup of tea. Like, we're getting tea before, like, wait, I was just doing something else. So it's a way of slowing us down to really pay attention to, one, what am I being motivated by? Is it just a conditioned habit of the mind to move and be busy? Or is, as we spoke 2 weeks before about working with our energy, are we aligning ourselves with the skillful investment of our energy into that which we value the most? But I want to read a little bit from the book, The Paramis, again, available online as an ebook for free, or as a hardback. It's harder to find in book cover, although I know Maria and others have found it. So he writes, the kante. So the process is very clear with the perfection of kante, patience, forbearance, or acceptance. So again, that's what is also an element of surrender, like, oh, it's just like this. And being able to meet this moment with a sense of it's like this, not with the cultivating, like, okay, I'll just be a doormat to however this is, but just more putting down that fight against. So sort of meeting this moment, oh, it's just like this. Okay, and then we kind of gather our resources to determine the next wise response to what's coming. So the Buddha famously declared kante to be the supreme perfection, oh, sorry, supreme purification practice. But it's both a restraint of holding the heart still in the presence of suffering until it lets go of the ways in which it creates that suffering. And I love this. Because the suffering is the first noble truth. In this human realm, there is suffering. There's the Pali word of dukkha, which can be translated variously as distress, dissatisfaction, the wonky wheel on the shopping cart. That's just Welcome to the human realm. That's this part of it. And then the other noble truths of, oh, there's a reason for it. Like the causes of that dissatisfaction or stress, there's a way to end it. And then the beautiful Eightfold Path, which is the map of how to work with limiting the amount of suffering that is the extra layers that we put on it, most often through the mind. Yeah, the different thinking in the mind is like, it shouldn't be like this. I don't want it to be like this. Whose fault is this? The blowing of the eight worldly winds. Yeah, praise and gain, blame and loss. These different qualities that are just part of the way the world, how it is to be a human in this world. Things don't always work out the way we want them to. It's not because we've done anything wrong necessarily, or that it's anyone's fault. It's just, yeah, that's how it is to be human. So this line of his that holding the heart still in the presence of its suffering, the heart mind citta habitually creates suffering and stress through reacting to, holding on to, or getting caught up with what life throws at us. All the perfections contribute to the lessening or the dismantling of dukkha, but the specific quality of patience is to carry the heart through the turbulence of existence so that it no longer shakes and sinks and lashes out. So this image of crossing the floods, the turbulence of our lives, if we think of sort of a whitewater rafting, and there's times where the water, the river can just be quiet and sort of just floating along, and then we come up on the rapid, it's a whole big mess, lots of turbulence, and we're gonna flip and die, or what's gonna happen? And this is the path, this is life. Right, the unfolding of life. Sometimes there's these nice calm eddies, and sometimes it's the whole big mess. Again, that's just part of the territory. And with these teachings of patience, it's like, okay, how can we hold on to a steadiness, whether there's the calm, gentle waters or whether there's this turbulence? And these teachings of how to work with the reactivity of the mind that wants to have a big story and a complication, and this isn't right, and woe is me. That's exhausting. It's not onward leading. It doesn't help us. It doesn't lead us out of stress. In fact, it just adds more layering of suffering. And to read that line again, the specific quality of patience is to carry the heart through the turbulence of existence, right? Again, it's built in. So that the heart and the rest of us no longer shakes and is so vulnerable to the vicissitudes of life. Patience holds us present with suffering in a spacious way, encouraging the mind to open. And an open mind both feels more peaceful in itself and more readily sees the causes of its own suffering. Patience deals with checking emotional reactions. Yeah, but it's not a denial of emotional intelligence. The book, another book I quote all the time, Christina Feldman's Boundless Heart, which I love the book. And I alternate between reading it and listening to it. And sometimes when I'm grouchy and I'm listening to it, and she'll have an example of somebody meeting some. Maybe they're meeting a terminal illness, and then the person, as she narrates, the person that then feels the beauty or the preciousness of life. And I was listening to it long ago, and I was in a grouchy space, like, just sort of getting annoyed. Like, I want to hear like it, that level of aspiration, like to meet when something's so terrible, and then immediately to go to this is going to awaken compassion in me. It's such a beautiful aspiration, and sometimes it's like, yeah, but I need that intermediate step of, oh my God, this is so hard. Or the part that's just get that does have a reaction of anger, or this isn't fair, to not miss that beat. Because I think it, one, it kind of, I know for myself, it puts a little bit too much pressure on what I should be able to transcend the suffering, but actually I'm kind of wallowing in it. And it's almost like by bringing patience to be like, okay, not so much to wallow in it and stir in it, but just, yeah, it's hard. It's unpleasant. This sucks. To honor that as a reality, to this is the experience that we're not going to stay there. This is where the teachings of impermanence are so helpful. Like it can be so hard right now, but we know through our life, we've experienced the nature of impermanence. All that arises passes away. But to not gloss over the part that's like, oh my God. This is really hard right now. Kristen Neff's beautiful teachings on self-compassion is that, oh, I'm having a hard time. You know, this is hard. The mindfulness of, hard. And then that connection with others of like other people are having a hard time. So to not feel like, wow, we want to be walking the spiritual path that we should be able to meet every opportunity, like, thank you, please, may I have another? Maybe. And there's also that honesty of, oh my God, this is really hard. So we're not bypassing any kind of reaction. We're just folding and like, yep, this too. This too. This is hard. This is unpleasant. This is frustrating. Pure patience is the kind of acceptance that acknowledges the presence of something without adding anything to it or covering it up. Yeah, like this again, seeing the actuality of this is how it is. Okay. Can I take a breath? Sit down with this, noting it may be pleasant, it may be unpleasant. Okay. Can I meet this moment? As Sylvia Bornstein would say, can I meet this moment as a friend, even when it's prickly and unpleasant? Our reactivity, that first response, isn't the truth of the mind. It's a conditioned reflex and it's not the self. And because of this, because there's that distance when I spoke of earlier of being able to watch the mind when it's busy and it pulls us, there's that kind of tendency of the reactivity to pull us forward. But the astonishing ability we have to watch it, like, this is what my mind does. Something's challenging. There's this whole reaction. Oh, I'm having this whole reaction. But that, again, the amazing ability we have to just observe it. Okay, because then there's that little bit of space, right? And with that little bit of space comes choice. We just kind of cultivate week after week, day after day, our ability to kind of sit and just watch. Oh, wow, my mind is really caught. Okay, don't do anything now because it's not going to be a wise response. It's just going to be more reactivity and cause problems. Okay, I'll sort of sit here, hold on, and just watch. Or the so here he talks about the worldly winds. Our chief sources of emotional pain are called the worldly winds, the gusts of praise and blame, the gusts of gain and loss, of fame and disrepute, happiness and unhappiness. These winds are constantly blowing. So that image I spoke of in the guided meditation of sort of sitting still like the mountain, these winds are going to blow for all of us. No one does not have them blow around us. Okay. And again, sort of being able to sit down in the middleness of that and just accept, okay, these winds are blowing. Can I take that pause? Can I take that longer exhale to notice that one, the reactivity that wants to complain or do this or do that, that might not be the most skillful means, and just slow down enough to say, let me slow down here and notice. I'm gonna switch gears a little bit to a poem by Murray Howe. And I've read this before, so bear with me. It's called Hurry. We stop at the dry cleaners and the grocery store and the gas station and the green market. And hurry up, honey, I say, hurry up. As she runs along two or three steps behind me, her blue jacket unzipped and her socks rolled down. Where do I want her to hurry to? Her grave? To mine, when one day she might stand all grown. Today, when all the errands are finally done, I say to her, honey, I'm sorry I keep saying hurry. You walk ahead of me. You be the mother. And hurry up, she says, over her shoulder, looking back at me, laughing. Hurry up now, darling, she says, hurry, hurry, taking the house keys from my hands. And there's a way we do this to ourselves. You know, we're like thinking this thought of hurry or what's the next thing that, and part of it's culturally, there's sort of we are rewarded for that. And there can be a sense of importance when we're so busy. But as what William James said back in the late 1800s, this busyness is a violence to our own sense of self, our own sense of ease. So this ability to be patient, of slowing down and just saying, wait. What else is here? How else can I be aware of what's happening? That patience is to be learned by feeling a painful feeling and no longer reacting. And that sort of space in between the stimulus and the response, therein lies, I would say, the quality of patience to be able to say, okay, this exhale, breathe, pause. Yeah. And whether it's a pause in a moment, moment to moment, finding those rest notes, or in the larger sense of patience in our lives, when we want things to go at a certain pacing, like, why hasn't this thing that I've been wanting to happen hasn't happened yet? And impatience for our lives to take on a certain form, or for things to come to us, the relationship, the job, the housing situation, the friendship, whatever. Doesn't always happen in our own timing, right? We've lived this. So another story that's shared frequently, but I do love it, from Zorba the Greek, that I want to share. So again, this is from Zorba. I remember one morning when I discovered a cocoon in the back of a tree, just as a butterfly was making its hole in its case and preparing to come out. I waited a while, but it took too long in appearing, and I was impatient. I bent over it and breathed on it to warm it. I warmed it as quickly as I could, and the miracle began to happen before my eyes, faster than life. The case opened and the butterfly started slowly crawling out. And I shall never forget, to my horror, when I saw how its wings were folded back and crumpled. The wretched butterfly tried with a whole trembling body to unfold them. Bending over it, I tried to help it with my breath, in vain. It needed to be hatched out patiently, and the unfolding of wings should be a gradual process in the sun. Now it was too late. My breath had forced the butterfly to appear all crumpled before its time. It struggled desperately and a few seconds later died in the palm of my hand. That little body is, I do believe, the greatest weight I have on my conscience, for I realize today that it is a moral sin to violate the great laws of nature. We should not hurry. We should not be impatient, but we should confidently obey the external rhythm. That's a big ask, because the external rhythm of things, the uncertainty of, is this thing that I'm working towards, whatever that might be, this thing that I'm desire, the craving, whether it's a wholesome craving or not, we don't have control over the timing. And sometimes that's hard. Right, we can get frustrated. It doesn't feel fair, whether it's a we're on a healing journey and the injury or the body isn't healing in the time that we would like. And the idea of relaxing into the natural unfolding of our own health path, like, really? And being able to both watch the impatience that comes in. Okay, this is what impatience feels like. Okay, making space for that, but also settling down into, we don't have control over things. Much. We have control over how our mind works. That's kind of about it. But there can be a conditioning that if we work hard enough, well, it's sort of somewhat embedded in it culturally. If we work hard enough, if we, I don't know, eat enough green vegetables or whatever, we won't get sick, or we'll get what we want, and we won't. I've told the story that I'm going to say a number of times in a day long years ago with some of the nuns from Alokavihara, and someone, a deep, the long term practitioner, had asked, basically, I'm doing all that, I'm practicing, I'm doing yoga, I'm doing all these things, in order to live a wise life, and things aren't working out. And she's kind of like asking the nuns, and I want to know why. And the nun, she's just like, why do you think this should work out? So clear and helpful. And the woman's kind of like, because it was really shocking. It is that sense of, she's like, things work out, they don't work out. That's just life. But we can have an expectation, whether we're conscious of it or not, that if we do the right things, it'll work out the way we want it to. And that last clause, I think, is key, because things do work out. It just might not be how we want. And sort of watching the mind's grasping of, I know what I want, and then the impatience to have it. Yeah. When in fact, it's being able to sort of, again, lean back into what the experience is, pleasant, unpleasant. Okay, can I meet this moment with as much presence, ease, openness, availability as possible? Because sometimes this is going to be hard, right? We know this. This is not news. But how we relate to the challenge really is so much of what the teachings are about. In the chapter on patience, Ajahn Sutita talks about when he was a monastic in Thailand, and there was, the way he describes the layout of the monastery, over here was a section for the, when you were being a serious, you were in deep practice, you're kind of off to the side. And he was in the deep practice mode, where he just really wanted to sit in silence and practice. But at that particular time on the monastery, there was a celebration of some sort, forgetting. But that maybe more people taking robes, but that celebration required the presence of all the male monastics to show up. And it was basically like a big party with loudspeakers and all kinds of basically noise all day, 24/7. And he said at first his mind was like, oh my God, it's so loud. And I actually want to read it because he's and appreciate how he writes so much. There we go. The environment was steeped in sound, the sound of the loudspeaker celebrating donations by naming each individual donor and how much they'd given, the sound of chanting, Dharma talks, announcements, the sound from any of the four films that were showing on the monastery grounds. There was no way I could block it out. But wonderfully enough, the sound was more continual and implacable than the complaining and resistance of my mind. Eventually, after a few days of turmoil, the mind just gave up and bathed in sound. And with that, the sound stopped stirring my heart. It was amazing to feel a sense of silence and space in the midst of so much noise. And I think my mind learned something important because sound has never been a problem since. I now know that the wise response to disturbance is to make it the object of meditation. And I love this because that's an extreme example. But so many times there's an impingement of whether we're sitting in a leaf blower or the garbage truck or whatever, or just the ways that conditions aren't the way we want them to be. When are they? Very unfrequently. But that idea of, oh, right, this is how life is. Okay, can I open up to that which is the disturbance? Can that become the object of meditation? Sound, 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 and not having to fight against it. There was a story some of you may have heard of somebody was sitting somewhere up in the mountains somewhere and very still, but was along a creek bed. But the sound of the creek was super annoying. So the person was moving the rocks around in the creek so it would sound better. And finally, I was like, wait, what am I doing? But the way that we can get caught in wanting to control conditions to kind of have things be just as we want them to be, not going to happen, right? Conditions aren't that way. All that arises passes away. So when we align ourselves both with the impermanent nature of all things, things are going to change. We're going to like it sometimes. We're not going to like it. Okay. Can we allow there to be the sense of patience, the sense of spaciousness in how we meet all that comes? From Rilke. Be patient toward all that is unsolved. I'm sorry. Yeah. Be patient towards all that is unsolved in your heart and try to love the questions themselves, like locked rooms and like books that are now written in a very foreign tongue. Do not seek the answers, which cannot be given because you would not be able to live with them. The point is to live everything. Yeah, that way that to live into the answer to questions. A little bit counter to how we're taught to want to know, you have to know. Why don't you know? Okay, can we live into the questions that we're asking? From David Wyatt, he writes about patience. We have patience for everything but what is most important to us. We look at life of our own most central imaginings and see it beckon. For the most part, we have not the courage to follow it, but we do not have the courage to leave it. We turn our face for a moment and tell ourselves we will be sure to get back to it. And when we look back again, 10 years have passed and we wonder what in God's name has happened to us. From Mary Oliver, patience. What is the good life now? Why look here, consider. The moon's white crescent rounding slowly over the half month to still another perfect circle. The shining eye that lightens the hills, that lays down the shadows of the branches of the trees, that summon the flowers to open their sleepy faces and look up into the heavens. I used to hurry everywhere and leaped over the running creeks. There wasn't time enough for all the wonderful things I could think of to do in a single day. Patience comes to the bones before it takes root in the heart, as another good idea. I say this as I stand in the woods and study the patterns of the moon shadows, or stroll down into the waters that now, late summer, have also caught the fever and hardly move from one eternity to another. So I'm going to ask you to close your eyes and sort of shifting your attention back into your body. It's a lot of words. Feeling yourself sitting in the chair or the cushion, the floor. And this notion that patience comes to the bones before it takes root in the heart. to hold that image. Patience coming to the bones, to the earth element, the natural patience of the earth and its element. And one of the things that Ajahn Suchito mentions in the book on patience is this notion of patience, the teachers of patience in our lives. And for some of us, it may be health challenges or financial struggles, struggles with employment, struggles with family members. And if you just take a moment to consider who or what are the predominant teachers of patience in your life right now, where we get caught, where we feel our impatience most strongly. No judgment here. Just an honest turning towards where do I get caught in impatience? Where do I find myself in a scarcity of the sense of patience? Is there a particular arena of our life, again, health or finances, work, relationships, with our own practice? And imagine almost sitting beside this patience teacher of ours. Even if it's just a vague sense of things not quite working out how we would have liked. And imagine sitting down beside this aspect or challenge, being curious, feeling the earth element in our own body, adding in the water element of flow and fluidity. We can access that within our own form. As we sit in both embracing, leaning into a sense of earth element, the water element. John O'Donohue's beautiful line, "May I live as the river does, surprised by its own unfolding." Can we, and by sitting in sitting as the mountain does, in the fullest capacity as possible of the earth element, to embrace the sense of can we allow our lives to unfold? Can we be surprised by its own unfolding? Which requires a staying close to our own experience, staying close to ourselves, staying close to the present moment, this experience, these senses, this very moment, this precious life. Buoyed by a sense of confidence, faith, generosity, wisdom. Relaxing into our own integrity and wisdom to meet this moment with gentle eyes, with an open heart. Say this too. To trust in the unfolding of our lives, moment to moment. And how does this feel? To embrace these patient teachers of ours that point us to this very way of being connected, present, steady, buoyed by faith and the goodness of our own heart. And just lingering here for a moment or two more to really feel how it is to embody this, or imagining embodying this as a way of meeting ourselves in this moment, in the next, and moving in the world from this place. Yeah, how about we just take these final moments. If we close your eyes and just feel into the heart. Whatever may be here. Feel into your own heart. And if it works in their mind's eye to hold our Sangha together, the image I always have of us by a bonfire out in some beautiful meadow in the Rocky Mountains. And feel your own heart and the beating heart of our Sangha sisters, those who are here today and not with us today. Feeling that sense of connection, sisterhood in the Dharma, and these liberatory teachings that allow us to meet all that's in this moment and in the next moment with a sense of spaciousness, trust, and beauty. I'm going to close with some words from John O'Donohue. So take a breath and find what is unsolved in your heart. Breathe in patience, breathe in love. Love yourself bountiful and send that love out to others. When you send love out from the bountifulness of your own love, it reaches other people. This love is the deepest power of prayer. And may all beings in all directions be touched by this power of our prayers today. Thank you to each one of you for being with us today. Please come back next week. Carlita, as always, thank you for holding us so beautifully. And please allow the warmth of this prayer to be like a cloak that keeps you warm in this coming week. So blessings to each of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.